Welcome to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. So pleased you are back with us today. We are going to preview the NFC East. We've been doing a division-by-division look around the league, and I think we timed it out just perfectly. We've got two divisions left, and we'll knock out the NFC East today and hopefully get you our final division next week before the NFL kicks off. But in the meantime, I want to congratulate you, the listener, on making it through the preseason. We are officially on the verge of meaningful football, and I know that you are as excited about that as I am, and I figure what better way to get people ready than, again, to keep looking around the league. And today we'll start with the NFC East, and pleased to be joined here in a moment by guest Brian McNally, Redskins beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan. And after that, we'll have another special guest, a new Pro Football Weekly freelancer, Andrew Garda, whose work you can find not only at Pro Football Weekly, but at various different sites. We'll let him fill you in on that momentarily. Pleased to start off our NFC East preview today with Washington beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan in D.C., Brian McNally. Brian, thanks so much for taking a few minutes. How are you this morning?
Hey, Arthur. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Appreciate it. And our listeners can find Brian McNally on Twitter in addition to all his work at 106.7 The Fan. Find him on Twitter at bmcnally14, bmcnally14. And Brian, I congratulate you. It sounds like Mother Nature spared you that trip for the fourth preseason game, so you'll be nice and fresh when Washington kicks off next week. That's a good thing, right?
I feel pretty good. I hate missing a trip to Tampa. It's nice, but if it's going to be a tropical storm, probably not worth going. So, we made the decision not to head down there, but we'll get back at it next Monday when the Steelers come to town.
Brian, from what I understand, Jay Gruden made the decision not to send half of his team down there, too. That was kind of a funny email. What, 26 players held back from the trip?
Yeah, they really kind of went easy on those guys throughout the preseason. I mean, a lot of Washington players didn't even take the field for the second preseason game. I mean, they held Kirk Cousins out. They held even guys like Will Compton, who's their starting middle linebacker, but he's not a star player by any means. Even he didn't play in the second preseason game. The Redskins really, really were devastated by injuries, I guess, last year in the preseason. They lost two tight ends. They lost their special teams captain. They had a ton of injuries, and I think the organization philosophy this year was, we're not going to go through that again. So a lot of starters didn't play in the second preseason game, and they basically gave the top 25 the day off for the Tampa trip. So they were taking no chances this summer.
Yeah, it's an interesting approach. I don't think it's unique to Washington. I think as we've seen the injuries unfortunately ramp up in the preseason, we've seen other teams be extra cautious. Obviously, we'll just have to wait and see what the product is like early in the season if there is an effect. But Brian, I want to start with Josh Norman because we're here in Chicago. There was an interesting interview yesterday about Brandon Marshall and his belief that the reason he was traded maybe first and foremost was for the Bears' unwillingness to allow him to take part in the Showtime inside the NFL show that he's a part of. I wonder what the reaction has been to Josh Norman being, I believe, a Fox analyst and how that's sitting with the Washington front office.
Yeah, fascinating interview. I read that Norman or that Brandon Marshall chat. It was really interesting how he was kind of pushing the angle that players have to take advantage of their fame while they play. If they wait until they're irrelevant or people aren't as interested, it's not going to matter. So kind of shed some more light on why Josh Norman would want to do this. There was definitely a public flap a little bit, not necessarily from the coaching staff, but Norman didn't necessarily tell Jay Gruden that he was doing this. I think it was worked out with the front office approval and all that. And so it wasn't that big a deal. I don't know that he's going to be doing, I know it's kind of been pitched as, he's going to be doing game day stuff. I don't know how often that's going to happen. I mean, they have a bye week and a bunch of Monday night football games. I mean, I think his Sunday appearances are going to be limited. So I think the organization was okay with it. And this is something that had been in the works since the spring, so it's not like they didn't know. But at the same time, Jay Gruden didn't know. So there's definitely some kind of miscommunication there between the two sides. It hasn't caused that big a flap. As long as Norman plays well, not an issue. If he struggles to live up to that contract at all, or have, you know, loses some battles against Odell Beckham Jr. or Dez Bryant, it's going to get brought up. It's the downside of what Brandon Marshall was talking about. If you put yourself out there like that, people are going to use it against you. So we'll see how he plays this year.
Yeah, it's a great point. And of course, before Josh Norman even gets to Dez Bryant and Odell Beckham Jr., right out of the gate, Antonio Brown, I can't wait to see it. Just your thoughts on the way that Norman has assimilated not only into the secondary, but into that locker room, because there were some rumblings that maybe he wasn't the most popular in Carolina. I wonder how it's going for him so far in the new stop.
I mean, so far, so good. No real issues with teammates. It's, you know, in training camp, it's tough maybe to see issues, I guess, cracks and fissures and that kind of thing kind of come out later. They come out during the season. They come out during losing streaks. Right now, all's good. There's no question he's a hard worker. He's usually the last one on the field or one of the last players on the field throughout training camp. He'd either be out doing extra drills or, you know, working on the jugs machine, working on his hands, just doing different things to stay ready. So in terms of work ethic and that kind of thing, Josh Norman wouldn't be here. You don't rise up from a walk-on at Coastal Carolina to the level he's reached in the NFL without being willing to work and to put yourself, put kind of max effort into things. You can argue whether he's the best corner in the game or not. There are a lot of people who will dispute that, obviously, but certainly the upgrade he gives the Redskins at a position of really desperate need where they were decimated by injury last year. Teammates right now aren't going to complain. They're just happy to have that talent around.
Yeah, no doubt. And we'll talk a little bit more about the defense in a minute, but I have to think, and you tell me if I'm incorrect, this is going to be an offensive football team and of course, led by Kirk Cousins on the franchise tag. But we can probably safely assume that the passing game is going to be pretty good. I think I want to start, and I should mention to our listeners that Brian McNally, B. McNally14 on Twitter, is also our Pro Football Weekly correspondent. You can find his work in the Preview magazine. I was going through your Washington scouting report a little bit this morning, and the thing that jumped out to me first and foremost is how the offense wants to find more balance under Jay Gruden. Give me an update on Matt Jones and that shoulder and why Washington either will or won't be able to do that early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, that was a buzzword last training camp too, you know, balance. You want to be a balanced attack. That's great until you realize you can't run the ball and you realize you have Deshaun Jackson, Pierre Garçon, Jamison Crowder was a rookie last year no one had ever heard of. Played at Duke. Well, they had 59 catches. There was only one rookie last year, one rookie receiver that had more. Then throw in Josh Doctson, their first-round pick, who obviously isn't ready yet with an Achilles tendon issue. He's slowly working himself to the point where he might be able to practice, might be able to avoid the PUP list. And, of course, Jordan Reed is maybe one of the top two or three pass-receiving tight ends in the game. So when you have those kind of weapons surrounding Kirk Cousins, it's great to kind of pay lip service and say, you know, we want to be, you know, balanced and run the ball and all that, but they have far fewer questions at receiver and tight end than they do at running back, where, as you said, Matt Jones is kind of the number one guy right now, but not really. I mean, he had an okay rookie year. He showed some flashes, kind of took some carries away from Alfred Morris, but was not by any means a star. I mean, he fumbled 5 times, lost 4 of them, 3.4 yards per carry, not good enough. And he missed the last couple of games of the year with an injury. It's a physical, upright running style that you worry can lead to injury. So a lot of questions at running back. I mean, they've kind of put all their eggs in his basket for now. And if he's not ready to start the season, he's supposed to practice this week or next week, I guess, when they get ready for the Steelers. But for now, it's tough to see that running game stacking up with the way the receivers are. So, you know, this, while they can profess to want to do both, this looks like a pass first team to me.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would also agree, even beyond the inefficient running from Matt Jones as a rookie, I mean, if you can't protect the football and you can't stay on the field. I think those are two small ingredients for a successful running back, but we will see. I just want to ask you quickly about Jordan Reed. Obviously, just a total game changer when he's on the field. Do you think he's been more snake bitten, or, and I don't even know if injury prone is a thing or if that's unfair to label guys with, but do you think Reed may be poised for his healthiest season yet? Is there any signs one way or the other that he is going to be able to play 16 games? I don't think he's done it yet, right?
No, hasn't done it yet. There's some level of, I guess, being snake bit. That's probably fair. It is tough when we start tagging guys, hey, he's injury prone or whatever. I kind of just said it with Matt Jones, but you realize there's so much bad fortune that goes into that as well. As long as the guy's putting in the work to be in shape and stay healthy, you can't really ding him too much. At the same time, you need to be reliable for your team. So Jordan Reed, coming into last year, that was a huge question mark. He'd had concussions. He'd had leg injuries. Even last year, he missed a couple of games. But, you know, look, if they get 13, 14 games out of him, they'll probably be thrilled. I mean, that's enough for that team, given what he puts up, almost 1,000 yards receiving, 11 touchdowns, just a nightmare matchup for safeties and linebackers. Probably their most important offensive player, to be honest. He opens up. He allows you to get away with not having, a top 10 running game or a really strong top notch running game, because he just opens up the field so much for those other receivers. And they take advantage of it. So, you know, to me, of all the players on that team, other than maybe say Trent Williams, he's probably the most important offensive weapon they have. Trent Williams at left tackle, obviously a four-time Pro Bowler, but you know, Jordan is that important to what they do, and they have to keep him on the field. If they don't, it's a game changer and kind of puts everything they want to do in jeopardy.
Brian, we are here in Chicago, and the Bears lost their starting center and have had some issues in the middle of the offensive line. It would seem, you know, judging by the fact Washington tried to trade for Brian Stork, he fails his physical and reverts back to New England. I believe he's on the street now. What's the status of the middle of that offensive line? You mentioned Trent Williams. I know how excited they are about Brandon Scherff, but what about at center? Is it the incumbent Corey Lichtensteiger, and what do they do there? Are they looking to improve?
Yeah, Lichtensteiger, interesting timing. The day before final cuts, takes a pay cut today.
Okay.
Now, he's taken every rep, first-team rep, really, since OTAs. So it's hard for me to believe, while they're definitely looking for an upgrade at center, Corey has 1 year left on his contract after this. He's 31 years old, missed 11 games last year. It's hard for me to believe a team's just going to pull a new center in and install them as a starter.
Right.
You know, a week before the first game of the season. But having said that, it is beyond clear that they're looking for an upgrade at that spot. I think in the draft, if Alabama's Ryan Kelly had been there, I think they would have gone in that direction. He got drafted a couple of spots early, so they traded down a spot and took Josh Doctson at receiver. Lichtensteiger, I think, is good enough for them to get by with this year, as long as he can stay healthy. And that was an issue last year, obviously. But they need an upgrade for sure. They need a younger player, somebody who can come in, they can kind of build around. And that's probably what they're doing, the Stork trade, trying to find ways to put themselves in position where you can have his replacement ready. That just doesn't appear likely right now. They have Spencer Long, who is in a fight for the starting left guard position. He is going to, he's been the second team center pretty much all through OTAs. So he's in the mix for that. He's never done it before. It's kind of a risky proposition to expect that he'd take to it that quickly. But he's kind of the backup right now, and obviously could start at left guard and then shift over if Lichtensteiger gets hurt. So that's their plan. It's not, definitely not a strength of this team right now, on the interior of the offensive line. Obviously, they do love Brandon Scherff at right guard, took him number 5 overall last year. But if there's a weakness up front, that's probably it, and that's something they just weren't able to address this offseason.
Spending a few more minutes here with Brian McNally. You can find all of his work, Washington beat reporter, of course, at 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Brian, tell me, what is the biggest potential roadblock for Washington as they attempt to repeat as NFC East champions? It's a division that still is very clearly there for the taking.
Yeah, I mean, they need to be better defensively, no question.
Right.
They could not stop the run last year at all. Mm-hmm. So it helps. Now you have Josh Norman and Bashaud Breeland as your starting corners. They brought in Greg Toler, started a bunch of games for the Colts last year. That's a pretty significant upgrade as a backup from what they had last year. They have a couple of young, promising corners as well, Deshaun Phillips and Kendall Fuller. That's all great. The safety position is converted corners. I mean, D'Angelo Hall is their free safety. How does he adapt to that in his first full season? His backup is Will Blackman, longtime corner in this league. Again, never played safety. He's going to be the backup there. And then up front, it's really not a star-laden group. I don't know how many guys in Chicago you would have heard of Steven Paya, who just got cut this week. But everybody else on the line, I'm not sure you would have ever heard of, other than Chris Baker, who had a really nice season last year with six sacks. You know, it's a lot of veteran guys, a lot of it's not a star-laden group. So can they get by with that? They tried to upgrade a little bit, brought in, but were unhappy enough with the group they had that they brought in Cullen Jenkins, a 35-year-old, 13-year NFL veteran, to just this past week to kind of shore up that spot. So he got some run in the Tampa Bay game, the fourth preseason game. So clearly they're still looking to upgrade there. Defensively, if there's a weakness, that's it. I mean, you can run on this team. You could last year, and they got to figure out a way to prevent that from happening again. They're definitely better at corner. They should be better overall in the secondary. But up front, you know, games can be won and lost there too, and I'm not sure they can get enough pressure on the quarterback either to make a what was a below average defense even average this year.
You know, it's funny, in addition to letting Steven Paya walk, the Bears managed to let Mason Foster walk, and the Bears had the worst group of inside linebackers in the NFL last year. So I don't know if Foster's been, it sounds like he hasn't been great per se, but I can assure you Chicago could have used him last year.
He was very good at the end of last year. He was actually stepped in and stole Perry Riley's job from him. I mean, at the end of the year, they really like the chemistry he has with Will Compton at the Mike linebacker spot. So he was an upgrade even on what the Redskins had, I think, which is, kind of fascinating. Scott McLuhan was very good last year at pulling guys off the street like Mason Foster, like Will Blackman, who were kind of instrumental in keeping them afloat when injury struck. So the Redskins scouting staff feels like they found a rejuvenated Mason Foster to go at inside linebacker. Still also not a strength of this team. I mean, those guys aren't going to make any Pro Bowls, Thompson and Foster and the guys they have behind them, but certainly a guy they liked enough when he came in that he was able to wrestle the starting job away from Perry Riley.
Brian, on the way out, I just want to get your take on Kirk Cousins and maybe a prediction, but one more question before that. You mentioned Josh Doctson dealing with the Achilles. Because of the strength of the passing game, it would seem he's going to take a little bit of a time to get acclimated. But what about Sua Cravens? You just mentioned the linebacker spot, not a particular strength, and I know they're kind of viewing him as a potential hybrid. How early can Cravens contribute? And Kendall Fuller, too. You said the corners are good, but what's the role for these next two rookies in the pecking order after Doctson?
Yep, second and third round picks there this past spring. Cravens, they've been using, they were up front. They said, we're going to put him at inside linebacker and let him learn the position. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's been. He is 226, 227 pounds. He is a perfect hybrid linebacker. He can cover running backs. He can cover tight ends. This is a team that's gotten exposed, I think, in coverage at that position a lot over the last couple of years. They needed somebody who could run, and Cravens is that at that position. So they've used him kind of all over the place, kind of their almost a dime linebacker role, I guess. There's a million different terms for it, but the versatility is what they needed, and it's what they've gotten with him so far. And he's had a pretty significant run with the second team throughout training camp, really. So he's going to see a lot of time. And Kendall Fuller was coming off, obviously, microfracture surgery on his knee that ended his Virginia Tech career. But he was ready to go really late in OTAs and was on the field at minicamp. struggled early in training camp. By the end, he was very good. I mean, he's been making plays here the last 2 or 3 weeks in preseason games that that strike you. He's been flashing for sure. So he's going to get a lot of time. I think Deshaun Phillips has beat him out for the starting nickel cornerback position, but it wouldn't surprise me if Fuller has that spot at some point mid-season as things go on here, because he's a very, very talented player.
So much great information from Brian today. We really appreciate Brian, a friend of the program. And just on the way out, I do have to ask your prediction on Washington's season and also Kirk Cousins playing on the $20 million franchise tag. Does he do enough to become the long-term solution there for Washington?
Yeah, I mean, D'Angelo Hall said it best in training camp. He said, look, we were a product of our division last year, won 9 games and made the playoffs, but they were under no illusions that they were a championship caliber team. And so some of the same things go into effect this year. I mean, they are hopeful they can win 9-10 games, and they believe they're better than the other teams in their division. But there's kind of a prove-it mentality here. A lot of people around the country probably saw the Redskins as a bit fluky last year and probably not really deserving of a playoff spot. They're trying to show that they're headed in the right direction. As far as Cousins, look, franchise record in passing yards last year. He's a pretty mentally tough guy. There has to be some regression from him. I mean, he was ridiculous at the end of last season. 24 interceptions, or 24 touchdowns, 3 interceptions his last 11 games. I mean, that's not really sustainable, obviously. So there may be some regression there. But he's going to put up numbers. He's got too many weapons around him. The offensive line may not be great, but it's got a Pro Bowl left tackle, and it's good enough. And if the running game does get on track, if Matt Jones does have a breakout year, then you could see one of the top 5 offenses in football. So Kirk Cousins, is going to put up numbers this year. He's going to have a big year, and they'll probably have to franchise tag him again because they've kind of put themselves in that position now. But to me, he's going to be even if those turnovers tick up a bit, he's going to be very, very good this year.
That's Brian McNally of 106.7 The Fan in D.C. dropping all kinds of knowledge. Brian, we appreciate it. I hope we will talk sooner. I know we will, but if I don't see you before Christmas Eve, I assume I'll see you at Soldier Field for the Bears.
100%. Chris, all our holidays are on the road this year. We got Thanksgiving in Dallas, Christmas Eve in Chicago, so it should be fun.
I'm sure your family is thrilled. Brian, thank you again for being with us today, and enjoy this final weekend before things get really nuts.
Arthur, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. That was Brian McNally of 106.7 The Fan DC. Make sure you look him up on Twitter at bmcnally14. Lots of good stuff there. In just a moment, we are going to welcome in our next guest, Andrew Garda, a freelancer for Pro Football Weekly, a football insiders, a sports on earth writer. You can find his work everywhere. Want to take a minute now to thank our outstanding sponsor, Loot Crate. Get ready for September's high-octane theme, speed. This month's Loot Crate has a high-octane assortment of goodies from Batman, CW's The Flash and Arrow, Battlestar Galactica, Iron Man, and Gone in 60 Seconds. If you have a style need, you'll love our Speed Loot Wear Collection, featuring Sonic socks for when you gotta go fast, a Transformers wearable for your world savings needs, a winning Mario Kart tee, and more. This Loot Wear collection is going to zoom away quick. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription. And very pleased to be joined now by our next guest, Andrew Garda, now a writer at Pro Football Weekly. So thrilled to have him on board. You can also find his work fantasy related at Football Insiders and Football Guys. And make sure you check out Sports on Earth as well to see what Andrew is up to. Andrew, how's it going? Thanks so much for taking a few minutes today.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's going well. We're past the preseason. We actually have real football to talk about. It's kind of exciting. I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, it is exciting indeed. This is a big day, obviously. All the fake stuff in the rearview mirror, and we can turn the page. So we're going to do that now with Andrew, talk a little bit of NFC East. Andrew has now written 2 stories for ProFootballWeekly.com. If you haven't found them already, make sure you head over there and do so. But we're going to hit on them now. And I want to start with the Giants offensive line. Since we received your story, and again, you can find Andrew Garda at @Andrew_Garda on Twitter. Andrew, since your story published, the Giants did make what I assume was a much needed addition to that unit. But just let the listeners know about the current state of the Giants offensive line, maybe even before Will Beatty's arrival and after.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem is that they didn't do anything before Will Beatty comes along and comes back, really, because he is a former Giant. This is a team that focused on the defense. They decided we've got a defensive problem. We're gonna sink all of our money into that, and we think the offensive line is gonna bounce back. Injuries won't be a problem. Eric Flowers is gonna improve. Yada yada. The problem is that Flowers hasn't improved at left tackle. Hugh's been hurt at left guard. Weston Richburg's been pretty good. He was the best guy, I think, on the line last year at center. Still consistently pretty good. John Jerry, Marshall Newhouse have been kind of a disaster on the right side of the line. So hoping that it improved just sort of through people being healthy and getting more reps hasn't happened. And that's been a real problem. I think adding BD is going to be a help. They can rotate him in at least with a guy like Newhouse. But, you know, the thing is, there are two things I take away from this. Is one, you know, this is really going to hurt the run game. It's going to make it difficult for guys like Rashad Jennings and Shane Vereen and, you know, Lord knows Andre Williams seems to need all the help he can get. It's going to be harder for them to really gain ground without having to create holes and things themselves. And so that's going to disrupt the offense a little bit. And the second one is that you look at the way this offense is, as Ben McAdoo came over from Green Bay a couple of years ago, one of the things he did was he brought that Green Bay, you know, high tempo, quick hit offense. We had a year where Eli Manning didn't really fit well in that. It was too alien for him. Last year looked much better. This year continues to look good, but the offense should be able to overcome some of the offensive line issues with tempo and speed and quick outs and things like that. They don't seem to be able to do that. And so that to me is as troubling as anything else. Is the one thing that they're going to be able to do, which is have that quick offense that the Packers have used in the past to overcome O-line problems, but it's not working right now. So they have an offensive line that's problematic, and then they also have an offense that's misfiring. That's not the way you want to enter the season.
Right, and you know, it's interesting because it's not as if Jerry Reese hasn't invested heavily in this offensive line, at least, what, three first-rounders and Flowers and Pugh and, well, I guess Richburg, what would be a second-rounder? But there have been some significant investments here in Flowers, I think the biggest of them all. What are you seeing? I know he's still so young. I mean, and you don't give up on him just yet, but what troubles you the most about Flowers' lack of development early on in his second, or no, late now into his second offseason, getting ready to start the second year?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I remember when they picked him and I didn't much love the pick at the mm-hmm. time. But then I felt like he came along all right last year. He wasn't perfect, but he did okay. This year, like you said, he just hasn't really taken that next step. And he occasionally seems to have lapses in concentration, I guess, is the best way, where he'll misstep or choose the wrong approach in terms of how to take on a defensive end, or if they haven't blocked him inside. A tackle coming in. He's not processing really fast. It feels to me like he's a guy who is still sort of thinking through the process. And mm-hmm. and that's problematic for left tackle. You got to be quick. You got to be on top of it. You have to react really, really swiftly. The center and the left tackle, to me, are the two most important cornerstones of an offensive line. Both of those guys have to be on point all the time. And Flowers just isn't there. And he does a little bit better, I think, you know, at times, and I think he does better with Pugh in there, but especially when Pugh is hurt, he just struggles too much. And I think really at the end of the day, you know, he's not getting any push off the snap. He seems tentative. He seems like he's thinking through things too much. And he's just not, blowing defenders off the ball. You know, he almost seems to catch them. You know, and that's not how you want the offensive line, especially on run plays, but even on pass plays. You don't want to be passive. You want to be aggressive. You want to be hitting the defender coming in. And Flowers just doesn't seem to be playing with that confidence and with that sort of surety of motion.
You know, I thought I saw a stat the other day that Eli Manning pretty much perennially sucks in the preseason. Is that accurate? And does that maybe make, he says, some of the offensive struggles early on here maybe make them a little bit less of a concern, given it all was in the preseason and he's done this before?
Yeah, I do feel like Eli tends to, like, struggle a little bit in preseason games. You know, and he himself said, like, he wanted to play the first game because he felt like he needed to get hit. Like, I feel like Eli is one of those guys that needs to be battered around a little bit and really get some dirt on his uniform to kind of get in sync. And I think, you know, part of the problem is that they've also had issues, you know, in the past. You know, Odell Beckham Jr., his rookie year, was hurt for so long, so he wasn't part of it. You know, the tight ends are in and out. So I feel like part of the problem is they don't have consistency in the players around him sometimes, and that hurts Manning as well. But, yeah, I think he's definitely a guy that takes the preseason to sort of get himself sort of psyched up for the regular season, and sometimes, yeah, it makes him look a little bit bad. But let's be honest, as long as he plays well in the regular season, Giants fans aren't going to care what he does in the preseason.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And certainly Eli has a long enough track record of regular season success that it's not like it's time to worry or anything like that, particularly when you look at some of the options he appears to have on his side. Of course, Odell Beckham Jr., everyone knows about. Sterling Shepard, I've said on this podcast, was my favorite player in the draft. I'm glad to hear that it looks like that's translating early on in his first offseason. I keep saying early on, obviously approaching week one. And that would make, well, first, your thoughts on Shepard as a compliment to Beckham, and is Victor Cruz, do people have any reason to perhaps be hopeful about Victor Cruz? What do you anticipate happens there?
I love Shepard too. You know, he wasn't one of my favorite guys, but I felt like the more I saw him in camp and the more I saw him sort of in preseason, to me, the better he looked. This past game, we finally saw more of Victor Cruz. The Giants wanted to see more he could do, get him more involved in the offense. And right. I think between the two of them, I really think that, you know, this could be a very dangerous offense. I feel like Shepard is a guy who can gain separation. He's got good hands. I've been excited to see what he could do. He can definitely go deep. And Cruz is certainly not the player that he was pre-injury, rather. But I feel like we saw enough from him specifically this week that I think that there's still some there. I mean, I know he puts in the time. I know he puts in the effort. He desperately wants to get back on the field. He may not become that number two, number one guy that he used to be, but I think he can do enough to continue to pull defenses off of Odell Beckham Jr. I think with those two guys, you're not going to be able to consistently double team ODB. It's just not going to work because I think Cruz can do enough to hurt you across the middle and on shorter routes. And I think Shepard can pull a vertical route and hurt you that way. So I think that this is going to be, from a passing standpoint, if Eli has the time to get the ball off, this could be a really dangerous group of receivers. And I think Cruz, not going to be a great year. I don't think he's going to be anybody you want on your fantasy team, but I think he's going to be a guy who he's going to produce enough to where, you know, he can look and be happy with what he was able to accomplish.
And, you know, I think we're certainly in agreement that the offense has a chance to be pretty explosive. And, you know, obviously the bigger changes have come on the defensive side of the ball. Andrew, chatting here with Andrew Garda, find him on Twitter @Andrew_Garda. What do you think about what Reese, I mean, he kind of went for broke in the free agent spending bonanza and then, you know, spent his first rounder on a corner that I assume is going to be expected to help early on. What do you think about the defensive changes and where do you see kind of remaining holes, even despite all the efforts?
I like, for the most part, I like what they did and bringing in Olivier Vernon. When I'm not doing football stuff, I would count myself as a Jets liker. I can't say fan anymore because I'm in the media. But so I was excited to see Damon Harrison join this group. I think that front line, that front four is going to be very scary. The linebackers still need a little bit of an improvement. Devin Kennard is a guy I really loved when he came in. And I felt like his rookie season, he did okay, but didn't really build on that last year, so I need to see more from him. You know, Jonathan Casillas, Jasper Brinkley at the middle. Yeah, it's a good linebacker group. I haven't seen enough to make me feel like it's a great linebacker group. So that's still somewhere I think there could be an improvement. I like Eli Apple. I think he's great. I might have taken Laremy Tunsil because they've had so many offensive line problems, and he would have been a steal. But I can't really quibble with Apple. I feel like he's coming. He's done what he's needed to do. They don't need to, like, shove him into the lineup consistently because you've got Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Janoris Jenkins. I think they're going to be serviceable. I think it's been a disappointment, certainly, for DRC. I don't think he's lived up to what they expected him to be when they brought him in. But he plays well, and it'll give time for Apple to improve enough to become more of a consistent guy, maybe get a starter. Darren Thompson, the free safety they picked up in the third round, is going to, me, be an interesting addition. Landon Collins, we know, is a good player. We know that he can, you know, that he is great at the strong safety. But can Darian Thompson step up and be that free safety guy consistently? You know, if the linebackers can play well and the secondary can step up and improve off last year, this could be a very good defense. And if it's a very good defense, then even if the offense is misfiring, this is a team that could win some games and have a shot at the NFC East title.
Right, right. And I thought Eli Apple was a little rich at number 10 or whatever it was, but what Jerry Reese did at pretty much every turn thereafter, and I might be a little biased because I go to the Senior Bowl and you get to watch these guys up close and personal, but Darian Thompson, the free safety out of Boise State, is another guy that just caught my eye repeatedly, and I'm excited to see what he does opposite Landon Collins, as you said, but I think he's dealing with an injury. What's the outlook on Thompson and maybe the backup plan, assuming he's not ready early in the year?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to move some things around, I think, a little bit. They may combine a guy like Nat Burry and McKelly Thompson there. Darian Thompson right now, it seems like they're playing it close to the vest. You know, it was always tough when Tom Coughlin was there because he didn't want to tell you anything. Ben McAdoo really isn't much better when it comes down to it. He is also trying to be very cautious about letting us know what's going on. You know, to me, I'm a little concerned for week one, you know, but so far, everything I'm hearing, it sounds positive. So I'm a little worried that he might not be there week one. I think they might at least limit how much he's on the field just to kind of be careful with him. They don't want that shoulder to be exacerbated. It is a long season. But by the same token, you know, it sounds like they're positive. So I think, you know, even if he's not there, they'll be able to fill in for him. But it sounds like Thompson's going to be there. I just have that sort of gut feeling that, you know, he'll be limited in some way for that first week.
Andrew, let's take a turn and head to Philadelphia, where you wrote another piece for ProFootballWeekly.com about the attacking Jim Schwartz defense and how that thing can work. It looks like the front seven personnel is terrific to me, but why don't you break down what you see and maybe some of the resemblances perhaps to what Schwartz had in Detroit with the way he wanted to use that unit.
Yeah, that's important to point out, you know, especially with the wide nine, as I kind of say in the article, it might scare some Eagles fans because they allegedly ran the wide nine when Bill Davis was at the DC there. But, you know, first of all, before we get too far into it, any team, you know, they could say they're 3-4, 4-3. You could say you play a 5-base, like whatever you want to say. These defenses these days switch up so much that, you know, it's almost like a guideline. We don't strictly play a 4-3. We don't strictly play a 3-4. It's just a general guideline. So even this wide nine, which would have your defensive ends well off of the tackle or tight end, isn't going to be something they do all the time. And you know, Schwartz likes to call it an attack defense. And what he wants to do is what I think any good defense should do, which is take options away from the offense. You know, limit the offense, the options the offense has. You know, so to me, what he's going to do is he's going to take his defensive ends, he's going to try and get them in on the quarterback and just close the gap between the quarterback and the DNs as quickly as he possibly can. You know, he will have the tackles, you know, coming in and trying to create some pressure, but it's going to be all about those defensive ends. And the great thing about this, in my opinion, with Schwartz is that he can move things around and he can move the linebackers up. He can have one linebacker up the crash, like the A gap or the B gap, depending on where he wants to put his interior tackles. You know, in terms of actually guys that they have, I really like the combination of Vinnie Curry, Connor Barwin, and Brandon Graham. at the ends. You know, and as I said in the article, I think Barwin they could put any place. You know, he wasn't a great fit at outside linebacker, but I think occasionally they could do that if they want to get three guys in there who are just going to crash the quarterback. You know, the interior needs to be solid. I think Fletcher Cox is a guy who can line up anywhere on the interior and be a real beast. And, you know, when you have a guy like that, it's sort of the Ndamukong Suh of this defense in some respects, because that's what Schwartz did with Suh. I mean, that's why he was in the backfield so much, is that you couldn't, you had to have your tackles totally engaged in where the DNs were going at all times. And then, you know, if you overload the interior and you have a good D-tackle or nose tackle, you know, a guy like Suh, you can crash and you can get at the quarterback. You can actually get to the quarterback. You know, once upon a time, tackles didn't do that. That's not the way things are now. I think Cox could be that guy, maybe not as effective, but he could be that guy in this defense. So I think this defense could be very, very good this year, and a huge step up from what it's been the last couple of years.
So for all the promise of the defense, and I agree with you, particularly in the front seven, it looks certainly very, very disruptive. Is it enough to cover up the cornerbacks? Do you worry about them as much as I do? And B, does it matter if Doug Peterson's offense can't take off a little bit? And maybe just your quick kind of prognosis about where things stand on that side of the ball.
Maybe and no. Maybe it can cover up the corners. The thing about, I always like to say, it's sort of a symbiotic relationship between the pass rush and the cornerbacks. You want quarterbacks mm-hmm. who can hold off the wide receivers long enough so that if you have a pass rush that's struggling, they can get to the quarterback, but you have to have a good pass rush to cover up, you know, poor or underwhelming corners. And that's what we have here. I mean, they have guys who can play, but they haven't been playing up to what everybody expected them to be in terms of Nolan Carroll and Leodis McKelvin. I think Malcolm Jenkins is going to be good in this. I think he's, you know, consistently plays well, but I'm a little worried about, you know, the secondary here. But if the front seven is good enough and you can get after the quarterback, that's going to make it a lot easier on covering up the problems they have in the secondary. Offense, I mean, man, you look at this offense right now, you don't know what to make of Sam Bradford ever. You know, he's always seems like he's one hit away from being done. Even beyond that, he's so inconsistent. I like Ryan Matthews in this offense more than I did even in Chip Kelly's offense, but mm-hmm. you know, we got to see him stay healthy and able to carry a full load. You know, and ditto Darren Sproles, the guy who, you know, he's getting older and starting to fall apart a little bit. Wendell Smallwood could be really interesting. I know he's a fifth rounder, so people overlook him, but he could fit in there really well and take over some carries from either of those guys. Wide receivers are kind of a hot mess. Jordan Matthews can bang up. Nelson Aguilar has been underwhelming and all get out. You know, Josh Huff is okay. They picked up Doriel Green Beckham, who, you know, when the Tennessee Titans are willing to move on from you, that's not good. I mean, that's not a good sign. It's not like they're spoiled for amazing talent at the wide receiver position. So I'm really worried about this Eagles offense. And, you know, that's the Achilles heel. I think you could have a great defense, but this isn't the Denver Broncos team where you've got some great pieces on the offense and just a problem at one or two positions. With the Eagles, there are problems all over the offense. And, you know, I'm not sure the defense is going to be able to cover enough for them.
And, you know, I want to talk some Cowboys too real quick with you, Andrew Garda, but I have to ask obviously about Carson Wentz. You know, he's not really relevant right now, you know, relative to Sundays as the number three guy. So A, what are you hearing about what he's shown in practice? And B, is there any way the Eagles might be able to move Chase Daniel with openings seemingly in Dallas and Minnesota to maybe put put Carson Wentz in a position to where he could be a factor this season if and when Bradford either struggles or gets hurt?
I think you could. I think they're a little hesitant now because Wentz is still reportedly having pain in his ribs. He's got a minor hairline fracture, so it's hard for him to throw. And I think at that point they're a little bit concerned because, you know, if something, you could almost say when something happens to Sam Bradford,
yep,
you got to have a guy who can step in. And so right now that's Chase Daniel. But we do have some time before the trade deadline. If Wentz can, you know, can get healthy over the next couple of weeks, to mm-hmm. start to throw the ball well, and they're happy with him, and they've been happy with his progress. They knew he was a project. You know, it's not like Jared Goff where we thought he was going to walk right in and like, be ready to go, and all of a sudden he's third string. With Wentz, we knew the going from North Dakota State to the NFL was going to take some time. So So I think they're pretty happy with his progressions. And, you know, I think they're happy to go with the three guys and have Daniel as the number two this year and then move Wentz up. But if, you know, like you said, with Dallas, with Minnesota, you know, they may be looking to move Daniel and see if, you know, Wentz can hold it together and if Bradford can hold it together, really, so Wentz can heal. But yeah, it's I think Wentz is doing all right. Where he's about where I expected him to be, minus the fractured rib.
Okay. Spending a few more minutes with Andrew Garda. Find him on Twitter at Andrew_Garda. Find him all over the web, starting at ProFootballWeekly.com, also on Sports on Earth and Football Guys. And Andrew, we wouldn't have an NFC East discussion without talking about Jerry Jones's Cowboys, obviously. I guess they're Dak Prescott's Cowboys right now. How is this team built to weather the loss of Tony Romo? Will Tony Romo ever get his job back again if Dak Prescott can even come close to translating what we've seen in the preseason?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. I mean, we got to see Dak, you know, under fire in an actual NFL game,
right.
before we can really, you know, go ahead and crown him. But, you know, we've seen this happen before. You know, we saw Drew Bledsoe lose his job not once, but actually twice, you know, so it's not unusual to see a backup come in who's a young guy who can play and maybe take away an aging vet's job. And Romo's been so banged up the last couple of years. I think in some respects, this is a team that is very well positioned to survive it. Mm-hmm. You know, picking up Ezekiel Elliott, you know, to me, I would have gone after a defensive guy because they need so much help on the defense. But Ezekiel Elliott, I can't hate on the pick because he's a phenomenal talent. Beyond this offensive line, which is still one of the best in the NFL, he could be an absolute beast. And then you just sort of ride him, Darren McFadden, and Alfred Morris, and you know, have Prescott throw occasionally. And you've got guys like Dez Bryant, Terrence Williams, and Jason Witten, who will probably end up blocking, you know, more than he's catching. But I think you keep the defense honest with that, and I think they should be okay offensively. But here's what the problem is. The defense is a tire fire. And if the defense is giving up like two or three touchdowns a game, then Dak Prescott has to throw the ball. And you know, as good as he looked in preseason, you know, he was kind of a fourth-round rookie for a reason. Like, I like what I've seen from him, but I'm not sold that he's going to be able to, like, come from behind by two scores and everything's going to be hunky-dory. So, you know, right. To me, they're going to want to grind the clock and put Prescott in a position to win because, you know, by running the ball, by not putting everything on his shoulders. But with this defense, with all the guys hurt and suspended, and, you know, probably as we speak, getting more suspended, I'm concerned that Prescott's going to be in a position to where he's going to have to win games. And I'm just, you know, no disrespect to what I think is a kid who could be talented and maybe have a real future in this league. I just don't think he's ready to do that right now. I think it's a lot to ask of a guy like that.
Yeah, that's a very sharp analysis. I agree with almost everything you just said. I have to, you know, before you went into the perfect segue of the defensive tire fire, I was going to ask you if there is a tougher coordinator position in the NFL right now than Rod Marinelli's. I mean, what is the guy to do given how undermanned that group is? And is there any way, I mean, do you see any path to where he can really overachieve with that unit like he did 2 years ago? Who needs to be the catalyst for that to happen on that unit?
He just needs a lot of guys who I'm not sure are going to be able to step up. I mean, you've got to have, you know, you've lost your guys you're going to depend on, like DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, Randy Gregory, Rolando McClain. I mean, they're not, you know, and then they drafted Jalen Smith, you know, in the second round. So, you know, guys that they're not there. So, you know, all of a sudden you're depending on Tyron Crawford, you know, Ryan Russell, you know, Jack Crawford. You need those guys to step up, you know, and I, you know, you still got Sean Lee, you know, you still got guys like Sean Lee, but he's not going to be able to carry the defense. Like you look at what a JJ Watt or someone can do. They still have a good defense around him, and that's not taking anything away from J.J. Watt. He's a phenomenal talent. He makes that defense better, but he's not the only guy on the defense. Like, defenses don't work like that. You can't win games with one dude unless he's, you know, a guy who can multiply himself. And so you got Sean Lee and then a bunch of guys who, I mean, again, you know, McClain, Crawford, Irving, these guys are going to have to step up way beyond what I think you would have expected them to be able to do before all of this happened. So I just Marinelli's got to get out, you know, his alchemy book and start mixing some formulas or something, because you know, I don't know how you scheme your way out of this. You know, maybe if you're Matt Patrice and Bill Belichick, you could find a way to make sense of this mess. But I think the majority of defensive coordinators would be hard pressed. And like you said, I don't think there is a tougher position right now than defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you get no help from your owner, and you have guys who are suspended and injured in part because your owner keeps picking up guys who have issues. So it's a mess. And unless they really surprise me, like Dallas, a team that should have been in contention for a playoff spot, there's a very good chance that it's going to come completely unglued.
Yeah, we're seeing it the same way, and we should mention that Sean Lee, 30-year-old Sean Lee, is currently dealing with some knee discomfort. I believe that ACL has been torn either two or three times, had an MRI this week, and just a lot to ask of him, and as you mentioned, of Rob Marinelli. Andrew, before I let you go, so much great information here. I do have to get a prediction from you. It sounds like it's not going to be the Cowboys, but how do you envision this division shaking out this year?
I'll tell you what, I didn't expect to even think this before the season, but I'm kind of leaning towards New York Giants. Them or Washington. And Washington has its own set of problems, but if the Giants offense can get going, that's going to be a really dangerous team. I think the defense is going to be pretty fine, but it's all going to be coming down to the offense. So I would say the Giants, and then my next pick would probably be Washington. I think the Eagles' offensive problems are too much to overcome, and I think Dallas' defensive problems are way too much to overcome as well.
That is our very own Andrew Garda, Pro Football Weekly, Sports on Earth, Football Guys, about a million other sites. Make sure you're checking him out on Twitter as well, @Andrew_Garda. That was good stuff today, man. I really enjoyed it. I hope you'll come back on the program soon.
Absolutely. We got actual football to talk about. I'm excited. I'll come on anytime you need me.
Outstanding. Andrew, thank you again so much. Enjoy your weekend, and we will take you up on that offer. We'll have you back very soon. Thanks again.
No problem.
And that was Andrew Garda with the NFC East breakdown. We have covered the whole league. The question is whether it will again be the worst division in football. There is a lot of investments across the board. Certainly some owners, some general managers feeling the heat to get a quick turnaround. And the beautiful news is starting here in about 5 or 6 days, we will find out. That's going to do it for this edition of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. As always, I am your host, Arthur Arkish. Thank you so much to our producer, John Solly, for his excellent work today. And, of course, to our guest, Brian McNally of 106.7 The Fan in D.C. and Pro Football Weekly's Andrew Garda. Make sure you come back next week as we conclude our division wrap-up and get you geared up for the 2016 NFL season. All that on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.